the best-selling book I've ever had in the Queen's bookstore. It's called the I Hate Mathematics book. Another one called Math for Smarty Pants.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
Welcome to part three of a four-part series with mathematics professor William Higginson of Queen's University in Ontario.
The whole world these days, and at least the information technology part of it, is built on an understanding of powers of two, because that's the way every time you touch a key on a computer keyboard, it's turning it into a symbol which reflects a set of powers. You strike A or any key, it's a collection of ones and zeros that get related into electronic circuits and so forth. I'm talking here about the other side of that, the equivalent of decimals, and because it's not with 9, 10 digits, it's with only 2 digits, these are things called bisimals, and they're fascinating, and they've almost not been examined at all. They do have this close connection to physical action, I think. There's work in psychology, there's work in philosophy at the moment around this idea of embodied cognition, that so many of our thoughts come out of our body, and I think that's probably generally true, and mathematics is an important subcategory of the set of thoughts that come out of our bodies. The person driving this work is a man called George Lakoff at Berkeley. He has a book originally on the language side called Metaphors We Live By, in which he reflects at length about how many metaphors have body roots, and then more recently he's brought his ideas to mathematics. So there's a lot of exciting work that's being done. There's a genius called Stephen Wolfram who is behind a powerful software company in the Midwestern United States called Mathematica. He's recently come out with a self-published book, 1,200 pages. It's called, modestly, A New Kind of Science. He says, among other things in there, that Darwinian theory is wrong, that mathematics, as we know it, is essentially just a narrow subcategory of what's possible, and that a study of something called cellular automata really is the new window onto understanding the nature of the world. It's massively controversial, but Wolfram is a prodigiously talented human being, PhD at 20 from Caltech, all these sorts of things. There's a lot of exciting work going on. I think homeschooling parents who have access to the Internet stand the chance of being able to point their children, some of their older children at least, in the direction of some of this work. There's all sorts of possibilities around merging language and mathematics with younger children around mathematical literature and our literature which has mathematical components, and using that as the basis for discussion with your children. I think there's some exciting possibilities. Realizing those possibilities is not easy. People like myself, I'm realizing, who thought about it at some length, have an obligation to try to get some of these ideas out into the world. I haven't done a very good job of that, nor have most of the other people whose work I respect in this area. It doesn't fit the conventional publication template that we as university professors are pressured into meeting. But I'd certainly be interested if any of these things that I've said interests your listeners. I'd be interested in hearing about that. I'm available at email at HigginsW, which is the first 7 letters of my surname and my first initial, W for William, so it's HigginsW at edu.queensu.ca. CA. My response rate isn't 100%, but certainly if people ask questions that I felt I could answer, I'd be happy to try to respond to them. And I do have a small project around trying to point parents of able children in the direction of resources. That's not so far away from the theme that we've been talking about, so I will try over the next year or two to get some things together on that side, and it's possible that some of your listeners might be interested in giving me some advice about what would be useful in that regard. I certainly appreciate that. There are a lot of resources out there. You have to work hard. Let me point you in the direction of a few things, possibly. There's a category of work called recreational mathematics, which has some outstanding writers who over the last 40 or 50 years have contributed things. Sometimes books by these people pop up in, you know, book sales, symphony book sales, or secondhand bookstores at reasonable prices and things. So they're worth picking up. People like Martin Gardner, Ian Stewart, Key Dudney, Doug Hofstadter, they were all people who wrote columns for Scientific American every month. Gardner did it for the best part of 25 years or so, I think, G-A-R-D-N-E-R. And any books by Martin Gardner on this general theme of mathematical recreations are well worth looking for. The Internet is a wonderful tool for finding out information about publications and also media things as well. But so three internet tools that I'd strongly recommend. Many of your listeners, I'm sure, know about them, but just in case they don't, Google, which is one of the most powerful search engines. You can just go to www.google.com or whatever it is, G-O-O-G-L-E. That's, by the way, a word invented by the grandson of one of these mathematical popularizers. And type in things like mathematics recreation or Gardner, and you can quickly get sent to places where there are many more details about these themes or these individuals. Amazon.com is probably the biggest and in some ways the most powerful online bookstores. And then the third source is for secondhand books, and that the best place I find for that is, it started in Victoria, British Columbia, interestingly enough, but it's called the Advanced Book Exchange, and it's now known as abe.com. And if you're looking for a particular book and you can narrow it, if you happen to live in Ontario, you can ask that only secondhand bookstores in Ontario will be searched, and you can sometimes find you know, pretty inexpensive copies of things. I've found public librarians very appreciative of recommendations in the area of mathematics, an area they feel a bit sort of unfamiliar with, not very knowledgeable about. They know children's literature extremely well and things, but they don't know much about mathematics literature. So sometimes if a book is frighteningly expensive, you can get access to some of these more expensive and recent things by getting your librarian to bring it in. There's a wonderful collection for older kids, or just as a almost a reference book. It's called an encyclopedia. In almost getting on for 50 years ago, a man called James Newman, who was a lawyer, strangely enough, put together a four-volume set which he called The World of Mathematics. It surfaces fairly frequently in secondhand bookstores. Microsoft, of all people, published an edition of it for a few years, and it's an amazing compilation. Again, it will be in libraries. It's really quite quite amazing. If you're looking for some classical sources, it's terrific. Dover Publications, they're a small publisher in some small center in New York State, I think it is, but they have a record of bringing books back into print. They have a very strong mathematics and mathematics recreation list, and the quality of their books is particularly high. I've mentioned The Crest of the Peacock, George Joseph's book. A woman called Claudia Zaslavsky, Z-A-Z-L-A-V-S-K-Y, I believe, also has written some quite pretty things, quite significant things around culture and mathematics, particularly in the African setting. And she has a book called Africa Counts, which I'd strongly recommend. Mm. I wrote a book, not to flog things too much personally, but I think it would be mentioned by other people as well, with two colleagues a few years ago, called Creative Mathematics, published by Routledge. And that's my colleagues there are Rena Upitis, U-P-I-T-I-S, and Eileen Phillips. and myself. You can chase that under Upetus. It's an unusual name, so that comes up. Simon Singh's book, S-I-N-G-H, on the solution of the Fermat problem is a particularly fine example of mathematics popularization. There's a wonderful book called Mr. God, This is Anna, by a quite idiosyncratic author. He has only one name, for example, F-Y-N-N. It's hard to know how much this is biography and how much of it's fiction, but it's a very special book. It stays in print year after year as a paperback, and you'll usually find it in the religion section of bookstores. And it's a very sad but very special book. A young child's perception of mathematics is a big part of that. What else would I recommend? A chap called David Mitchell, if you're interested in the connections between mathematics and origami. David Mitchell has a book called Mathematical Origami, published by Tarquin, which I'd particularly recommend. And two women who I respect very highly in the area of mathematics education both have a large number of books. A woman called Marilyn Burns, B-U-R-N-S, and I find it a bit sad that one of her titles is the best-selling book I've ever had in the Queen's Bookstore, and that's because it's called the I Hate Mathematics book. And she has another one called Math for Smarty Pants. And if you know, you wanted to sort of think about doing some mathematical things with children, say 7, 8 and up, or cognitively operating at the 7, 8 age and up, I'd strongly recommend the I Hate Math book and Math for Smarty Pants. There's a lot of very attractive ideas. Burns, unlike some other people who've written books of that sort, one of the reasons I admire her so much is because she, after writing those books, which are essentially just neat things to do, she went on to write a lot of other books where she sort of elaborates. She shows what those neat tricks and games are based on mathematically. So she has a lot of other things. She's easy to find on the internet. And the other woman who falls in that category is a woman called Theone Pappas, P-A-P-P-A-S. A couple more. A man called David Wells has three quite interesting publications with Penguin. They are dictionaries of, one of them is Dictionary of Geometry, another is Dictionary of Curious and Interesting Numbers, and a third is a collection of games and puzzles. Many, I'd virtually say almost all games have a strong mathematical component. Things like Rubik's Cube, which were popular a number of years ago, is nothing more than pure mathematics in one sense, and Wells does a particularly good job of showing that. One of the few sort of teacher handbooks that I think would homeschoolers might find attractive is a book by Sobel and Maletsky. That's Max Sobel, S-O-B-E-L, and Evan Maletsky, M-A-L-E-T-S-K-Y, called Teaching Mathematics, a Sourcebook of Aids, Activities, and Strategies. That has a lot of quite nice things. And the single textbook which I admire most in the recent years is by a Californian math teacher called Harold Jacobs, J-A-C-O-B-S, called Mathematics, a Human Endeavor, and that's published by Freeman. It's, unfortunately, in its recent editions, very expensive, but it's often in libraries, and some of the early editions pop up. A man called Keith Devlin writes a lot of popular stuff. His book called Mathematics, the Science of Patterns is interesting. Don't ask how the computer fits into your discipline. Ask what your discipline is now that computers exist. And, you know, it was, on one hand, a sort of flip phrase, but there certainly was some truth to it, I think, not least for mathematics. And so a lot of the recent activity in mathematics has been work that has been enabled by the availability of powerful and not impossibly expensive computers. And a side effect of that has been awareness in the general culture that there are many striking visual patterns that are based on mathematical ideas, and I'm thinking particularly here of the fractals and chaos work, say a popularization by James Gleick called Chaos. And so there's been this awareness that some of these ideas are really important somehow. This idea that mathematics is only about the totally controlled and the totally predictable and so forth is not correct, and that the world is a complex place. We need different ways of modeling it and different ways of understanding it. And this has begun to surface in a lot of different popular publications. There were two books, for example, a few years ago on the rather unlikely topic of the concept of zero. In literature, we're finding reputable publishers, decent sales, books based on mathematical ideas. In the theater, we're finding, in fact, there quite a popular play, the Pulitzer Prize in the U.S. For drama a couple of years ago, and it's a play which is beginning to surface all around the world, a play called Proof by a man called David Auburn, dealing with quite profound mathematical ideas, and certainly computer games have always, there's always been an awareness that there was a small mathematical component to those. That game of Tetris, which I mentioned in passing earlier, amazingly popular. That's dropping these shapes down a well and trying to make them fit snugly without holes. Appeared on lots of computers and even a lot of handheld devices. Very interesting feature of that game was that it was one of the few computer games where there was very little gender difference in the reception. A lot of computer games, girls do not seem to find tall interesting, but Tetris was found to be quite interesting. So lots of indications in the popular culture that people are realizing that mathematics is sort of something worth thinking about, wrestling with publicly, art forms, which, not that these things didn't exist before, but they certainly didn't exist in the numbers and the intensity.
Kumon,
it's a sort of replacement for schools comes out of Japan, I believe. Perhaps Korea, I may be wrong on that. But it's a franchise, and it purports to be, and I think accurately, very successful in working with children who've not been very happy and very successful with their school mathematics experience. It's very highly structured, very number, at least initially, very number-oriented. One of the things I haven't said is that I think one of our problems is that we have given the number component of mathematics far too much prominence, and we've given the space and geometry component not nearly enough recognition, and Kumon, in my view, sort of really reflects this. But many people are very positive about it. I think for some children, some of it would be a very good idea, but to leave your child there too long or to have your child sort of feel that the Kumon approach was really the answer to things doesn't get you a long way past our friend who says you only need the basics. So I'm ambivalent about it. Saxon is, in some ways, an American version of that phenomenon. Saxon is a very, very aggressive, I think he came out of the American military at one point. One shouldn't let that sort of influence one too much, but he's also exceptionally aggressive in his salesmanship, and he has written a series of textbooks which he makes grandiose claims for. I don't know. I mean, I try hard, partly because of the reaction to Wolfram's work. Many people have just written them off because of style and arrogance and so forth, and I don't want to make the same mistake that I accuse some of them of with Saxon, but I don't personally find Saxon's approach to be very interesting. You know, it's a variation on if a thing isn't worth doing, it isn't worth doing well. Saxon, I don't like his conception of what mathematics is. You know, if you look at the mathematics education picture generally, everybody will acknowledge there's a lot of kids who are not being served well, and many people will just identify them as the kids who are failing, they're dropping out, etc. I think even some of the kids who have been successful by others, some standards, we've also failed them because we haven't given them nearly, ambitious is not the word, but we haven't given them an authentic picture of what mathematics is, so they're really good at certain sorts of things, but those things are not, in the end, that important, and sort of thinking that they're important makes you a hazard. And I guess that's where I see Saxon as well. And getting back to your particular example, we're now having, have just had one of the best treatments of another mathematical concept, and it is this concept of the golden section, the golden rectangle, if you wish, the shape which some people will argue is the most beautiful proportion that in a certain context we can imagine. And so this is just a major book, and a very good book, I think, has just appeared on this theme. There's been a lot of other books related to that which have never surfaced quite as publicly, and those have come out of circles which would be classified by some people historically as being esoteric or New Age or whatever, and a class of publication which you've mentioned, which is this idea of sacred geometry. This points us back into the direction of possible connections between mathematics and some areas like spirituality, religion, philosophy. These links have been very, very close. It's well known that Newton was a great scientist. The fact of the matter is that Newton also spent an enormous amount of his time, particularly later in his career, dealing with things that we would now, you know, classify as being investigations of the occult. And this has been true of many philosophers, theologians, some of whom have taken their ideas and brought them into educational cycles. I'm thinking here of, for example, of the Steiner schools. They have a set of beliefs about dimensionality, for example, which are on one side simply theological. We have corporeal existences, but we have spiritual existences as well, and those ideas actually surface in some directly connected ways in the sorts of curricula that they present to children in their schools, and very mathematically very beautiful. There's a version of geometry known as projective geometry that, you know, some of the people in Steiner schools are among the only people I know of who feel that children should understand those ideas. So There's a lot of different ways to approach this. I think the remarks that I made earlier about mathematics and aesthetics, that's, you know, in a sense, just my version of some of these same issues. There's a sort of ecological version of that, which is, again, becoming quite popular. Ian Stewart, the prolific British mathematician at Warwick University, has just written a book called What Shape is a Snowflake? And that's a collection of reflections on why various forms exist in nature. I think there's some close connections, and they're connections which are, I think, much more important for relationships between generations. That's why I mentioned that Mr. God, This Is Anna book, for instance. It's not coincidental that that could be classified either as a math book or as a book in religion, that these ideas about continuity is another very important mathematical idea, that we are here for in a physical existence for a finite amount of time, but that we are messengers. We transmit messages, ideas of certain forms. And as I've referred to earlier, the way in which our physical home is being treated by many of the most powerful members of contemporary culture is a source of great worry to all intelligent people on the planet. And in attempting to think about ways of counteracting some of those pressures, I find mathematical models, some mathematical ideas, mathematical concepts, mathematical images to be very helpful.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
Talking about different models, our understanding of the cosmos is currently under vigorous debate, or the Big Bang or whatever it might be. The model is just a flat plane, but there are people who are saying that what we're observing about features in the cosmos are probably better explained by different types of geometry. And then we're right back to the sacred geometry folks who also have thought about different types of geometry, different types of connection. But there's a wonderful man called Jeff Weeks, who used to be a university professor, but I'm not sure if he didn't like that or not. I mean, he would appear to have been a wonderful writer and popularizer of profound mathematical ideas, but now I understand he describes himself as a freelance cosmologist. But he's quite a profound thinker, and his thinking is essentially around different ways that the universe could be connected in a geometric, physical sense. And it's fascinating, really fascinating stuff. So it's a really rich area. Once you plug into the internet, man, you can sort of move directly in many areas to the cutting edge of discussion about intellectual thought, model building, whatever. I used to be on the international origami list, and it was the musical equivalent of, in the 19th century, whatever it is, my musical history isn't great, but being able to listen into conversations between Brahms and Liszt and Schumann and so forth. I don't know if that was chronologically a possibility, but you get the idea that the best thinkers in the world, you can tie into their ideas. And that's really quite exciting.
Radio Free School, a show by, for, and about home learners.
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper, I'm gonna daub myself with glue, stick some stamps on the top of my head, I'm gonna mail myself to you.
contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.